It's been almost a year now since Russia invaded Ukraine, and there seems to be no end in sight to that conflict. Is this what the U.S. and the West actually wants? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, but don't hit the notify bell because you have a life. Also, follow us on social media. At Crisis Mag is our typical handle at Twitter and Gitter and Gab and Facebook and all the other places. Join us for the conversation there. Also, we have a Telegram channel. I encourage people, if you look at the bottom of any article of Crisis Magazine, there'll be a image that says, join the conversation, go to Telegram. Now, I do require when you join the Telegram group that you have to have a real name you use. I can't prove it's your actual real name, but if it's some just handle with no picture on it, I'm not going to approve it because I'm trying to have that conversation be at least somewhat more moderated than maybe a YouTube channel, a YouTube video might have. Okay, so let me just go ahead and get started now. So like I said, it's been almost a year since Russia invaded Ukraine. That was February 24th, I believe, 2022. Now we're in February 2023. So I want to give a little bit of an update of what's going on over there and how I see the development of what's going on. And I do this based upon, I do a lot of reading, to be honest, on this conflict, but I do a lot of reading outside the mainstream media. I do look at the mainstream media accounts of what's going on. I do follow that some to hear what the media narrative is, but I also want to follow what alternative media is saying, because so often they give information that the mainstream media is, if it's against their narrative, they're not going to share. Now, before I really get into this, I just want to make a couple disclaimers. First of all, I've done a couple podcasts on the Ukrainian conflict, so I would recommend you go to those if you want to get a sense of my own views on this. I'm not going to try to explain the whole background here. I've done that in the past of how we got to the point where we are, got to the point of Russia's invasion, I should say. So I just encourage you to go back into the podcast and look for, just search on Ukraine and you'll find my previous podcast on that. Secondly, a disclaimer, I'm going to say things against the current thing. I do not have a Ukrainian flag in my bio on Twitter or anything like that. I just don't support the media narrative. And so if that triggers you, if you have a problem with that, I would just suggest perhaps you listen to something else right now. Also, if you want to call me a Putin stooge, I won't consider you a serious person. If you want to say I'm on the side of Russia and I support Putin's actions, then I don't treat you as a serious person, because you shouldn't be treated seriously if you say things like that. Here's how I look at it. There are three moral actors, so to speak, in this situation. You have Russia, you have Ukraine, and you have the West. Now, of course, in the West, there is multiple actors within that. But honestly, the West is dominated by the United States, also United Kingdom, as far as directing how things will be done. And so I compare it, for example, let's say you're in a schoolyard. You have these two people, two boys who are getting ready to fight each other, or they're arguing, or whatever the case may be. You have a third party, maybe the crowd, or maybe somebody in the crowd, who's egging it on, who's doing things, intervening, like talking to one, talking to the other, saying, oh, that guy, he disrespected you. Oh, or look out, he's about to punch you, things like that. Well, in that situation, all three of those parties are part of the equation. And so guilt can lie at different levels in all three of those parties. And so saying that, for example, the third party who's not in the fight, but who's egging it on, saying he's doing something wrong, doesn't mean you're saying the two boys in the fight aren't doing anything wrong, or one or the other isn't doing anything wrong. It's simply saying that there's more than two parties in this conflict, in this fight. And I think the same is the case here. Now, since I live in the West and the audience of Crisis is predominantly in the West, I think it's important for us to look at the West's role in all of this. Yes, we can stand up here and we can condemn Russia. That's easy. Everybody does that. And where does it get us? Nowhere, other than just saying we condemn Russia. We can laud Ukraine, how great it is, how it's freedom-loving and democracy and all that stuff. Where does that get us? It's not actually true, a lot of it. So that's a problem, but it doesn't get us anywhere either. But here in the West, we should really look at the role that we play that the West plays. And that's what this podcast today is about, really, is the West's role in all of this. And anything I say here doesn't mean I'm saying Putin is the savior of the world, Russia is great, Ukraine is terrible, anything like that. It's simply stating, let's focus on what the West is doing. So now the narrative we know, the media narrative that's pushed by the media, obviously the government and all the powers that be in the West, is that NATO, the U.S., they're innocent and benevolent supporters of Ukraine, which was invaded by Russia, unprovoked, completely. It was a completely unprovoked invasion, and all fault lies with Russia, and zero fault lies with Ukraine, and zero fault lies with the West. And so if you notice, the most important thing there is that this was an unprovoked invasion, which means it just came out. If you really mean it's unprovoked, that means you mean that you believe it came out of the blue. There's nothing leading up to it other than just, I don't know, Putin's insane. He just wanted to imperial Russia, whatever the case may be. And so that's the narrative. And so that's what I'm going to say. I think there's flaws in that narrative. I think the West's role in all this needs to be looked at. I have podcasts in the past where I talked about the West's role leading up to this, their role in the 2014 coup, for example, their role before that in pushing to get Ukraine as part of NATO. All these things that help lead to this situation we're in. But I want to talk about what's happened since the war started. And I think one of the biggest things is something that came out recently. There's been rumors of this, but this is the most backed up story we've seen so far about this, is that there was actually a peace agreement that almost happened in March of 2022, i.e. right after the conflict started, right after the invasion. There was a peace agreement that both Ukraine and Russia were very interested in potentially following, but the West basically killed it. And the real bad guy in all of this is Boris Johnson, the former prime minister of the United Kingdom. He's the one who really pushed to scuttle this peace agreement. So what happened recently then, the former prime minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, he basically was involved in this. And he said that on March 4th, 2022, so that's only about a week after the invasion started, he traveled to Russia to meet with Putin. And he said he detailed, and it was basically to be a mediator between Putin and Zelensky, and which he coordinated with the United States, France, Germany, and the UK. And so he said both sides agreed to major concessions during his efforts. He said the Russians agreed to drop the denazification as a requirement for a ceasefire. And they said they kind of define it as a removal of Zelensky. Basically, we're not going to require Zelensky to be removed. They also wouldn't seek the disarmament of Ukraine. The only thing they wanted, I mean, the main requirement was simply that Zelensky would have to agree that they would not seek NATO membership, that Ukraine would not seek NATO membership. Ukraine, on the other side, they basically also made concessions. And so I'm trying to see where I have this written down here somewhere. Essentially, though, Ukraine and Russia were in agreement about this. But then Boris Johnson jumped in and he took an aggressive line. France and Germany were more pragmatic, and Biden adopted both positions. Sounds like Biden, he probably didn't know what each position was. So again, this is from the Prime Minister of Israel, the former Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett. And so essentially the Western leaders opposed this effort and they just said, nope, we're not going to do this. They blocked it and they scuttled it. So what we see there though is essentially for Ukraine just agreeing not to join NATO, this whole conflict could have been over. And Zelensky himself was open to this, but the West killed it. It was the West, it wasn't Zelensky. It wasn't Ukraine that killed it. It was the West. It wasn't Putin who didn't agree to this. It was the West. So they did try more negotiations after that. Later in March, they met in Istanbul and they followed up with virtual consultations and they agreed again on a tentative deal. But again, the West pushed and said, no, don't agree to this deal. Boris Johnson, he visited Kiev in April. He urged Zelensky not to negotiate at all. That had already come out before. But essentially what happened was, is he, led by Boris Johnson, the West killed any chance of peace. Now, I don't know about you, but I think if the invasion would have ended and Russia would have pulled out of Ukraine just under promises that Ukraine would not join NATO, that's a win-win. I don't see how that is, there's anything wrong with that. That is something they should have jumped at. But the West said, no, we're not going to do that. And also there are sources that said that, look here in my notes. Yeah, so essentially what happened was, is that the West said no, because for the West, essentially what happened was they decided to make the Ukraine war not about Ukraine, but about getting rid of Putin, about basically having Russia, a regime change in Russia. And you see this, for example, I mean, President Biden in March said, for God's sake, this man cannot remain in power, talking about Putin. Mitch McConnell said the most basic reason for continuing to help the Ukraine defeat Russian invaders are cold, hard, practical American interest. McConnell continues to saying, helping equip our friends in Eastern Europe to win this war is also a direct investment in reducing Putin's future capabilities to menace America, threaten our allies, and contest our core interests. So for the West, for America, for example, this was a matter of taking out Putin. And so Senator Joe Manchin, he said at the World Economic Forum in May of last year, he opposes any kind of peace agreement between Ukraine and Russia, preferring instead to use the conflict to hurt Russian interests and hopefully remove Putin. Quote, I am totally committed as one person to seeing Ukraine to the end of the with a win, not basically with some kind of treaty. I don't think that's where we are and where we should be. I basically mean moving Putin back to Russia and hopefully getting rid of Putin, when he was asked what he meant by a win for Ukraine. And of course, Dan Crenshaw, the congressman, the eye patch congressman, super neocon, he said he had tweeted out last year, investing in the destruction of our adversary's military without losing a single American troop strikes me as a good idea. So in the eyes of the West, it wasn't a matter of, okay, let's negotiate a peace that Ukraine is satisfied with. It's a matter of, no, let's use this as a proxy war to destroy Putin and essentially destroy Russia as much as possible, at least weaken them greatly, because they're seen as a main adversary of the United States, of the West. And so because of that, what we've seen is, since the start of this conflict, instead of trying to get a peace agreement, what we've done instead is we've really pushed supporting Ukraine as much as possible, supporting them militarily, supporting them with money. I mean, at this point now, we have spent over $100 billion. Here, I'll pull up this chart for people who are watching. Our aid to Ukraine, this is as of, I think, about a few weeks ago. We've given $113 billion, that's billion with a B, billion dollars in aid to Ukraine. To put that in context, you see, if you're looking at the chart, you'll see that is more than the entire military budgets of India and Russia combined. Russia has a $66 billion military budget. India has a $76 billion. UK has a $68 billion. France and Germany are at $56 billion each. But we spent $113 billion in aid to Ukraine since the start of this conflict. And so we're just sending money left and right, hand over fist. And recently, we've actually had a few more. And so just here's an update of the weapons. This is just the weapons we've sent. We've sent tons of money in other ways. I don't know if you can see this on the screen or not. But essentially, as of this week, this is actually from the Pentagon, you can see that we sent $30 billion in just military aid. So just over 1,600 Stinger anti-aircraft systems, over 8,000 Javelin anti-armor systems, over 52,000 other anti-armor systems and munitions. And the list just goes on and on. I'll pull up on the screen. It's two pages worth, a list two pages worth of military equipment that we've been sending to Ukraine since the beginning of this war. And so ultimately, recently, I should say, the escalations have of military equipment has gone up, because one of the biggest things we've done recently is we've actually sent tanks to to Ukraine. We're about to send them. We can't send them over quickly, but essentially what we're doing is we're sending some. We're seeing 31 M1 Abrams tanks along with German tanks. This is a reversal of a previous policy of both the United States and Germany. In March of last year, Biden explicitly said, no, we're not going to send tanks over there. That would be like World War III. Of course, over tanks. So we're sending now these significant military tanks over there, Germany as well. And Germany was not planning to send any tanks over either. I mean, just to take a step back here, the idea of Germany being involved in a war with Russia, that should send shivers down anybody's spine if you know anything about 20th century history. I mean, Germany has actually stayed out of most military conflicts directly since the end of World War II for obvious reasons. And now that they're planning on sending tanks as well, I think another country, I think it was Norway or something, is also going to send a couple tanks as well. But we're sending 31 tanks now to Ukraine. Also, we're sending long rockets. We're sending ground launched small diameter bombs that can hit targets up to 94 miles away, nearly twice the range of the munitions Ukraine is currently using with the U.S. supplied rockets they have now. So we're upping it. You know, we started from the beginning sending money to them. We sent certain military equipment to them, and now we're sending more advanced military equipment, tanks, longer range rockets. Now, I don't know how, if you take a step back, I don't know how you can say this is not a proxy war. This is clearly a proxy war between the West and Russia. And I don't know how you think Russia would think it's anything other than a proxy war with the West at this point, because we're sending so much. And just so you know, this is a bipartisan effort in America. Some Republicans are pushing Biden to send even more weapons, even more advanced weapons over to Ukraine. So this is not just Biden. Biden is a hawk of hawks. He's a neocon when it comes to war, and he's awful. But a lot of the Republicans are pushing it as well. They want to send more and more over. And so what we see is, we see this two things, first of all, in the past year. The West has scuttled any talk of negotiated peace. And second, the West has done everything it can to escalate the conflict by giving more and more, continue the conflict, escalate it, have it basically be never ending unless Putin himself is killed and Russia completely gives up 100% any of their claims in Ukraine or just frankly anywhere. Because what we see is that the West is pushing for more than just Russia to leave Ukraine. And so why is the West doing this? Why did the West not agree to the peace settlements that happened last March? Why is the West continuing to escalate this conflict and make this like it's the most important thing for Americans to support and to push this conflict that's halfway across the world? I think the reason is what I said earlier, but is that the West wants to destroy Russia. It wants Russia to be no longer a power in the world. I think a lot of Western elites believe that a mistake was made at the end of the Cold War back 30 years ago, that at that time there was the possibility maybe of really crushing Russia, breaking up into multiple countries. And that wasn't taken. And so now a lot of Western elites believe this is the chance to do it, that now we can really do this. Angela Merkel, the former chancellor of Germany, for example, she talked about this recently. She said that the Cold War was never really ended because ultimately Russia was never pacified. Russia's primary offense, according to Merkel, is that it occupies a strategic area of the world that contains vast natural resources and it's critical to Western interest. And so basically, Merkel admitted what the West really thinks is that the Cold War never really ended. And that because Russia wasn't pacified. And by pacified, she means, and the Western elites means, completely brought to heel, with no ability to have anything on their own, no power of their own. And that's exactly what the West wants. And so Russia becomes an obstacle. You know what it becomes an obstacle to? It becomes an obstacle to the continuation of the unipolar moment. What do I mean by that? Essentially, the unipolar moment means when there's one world power, one world power that's basically dictating how things are happening around the world. And since the end of the Cold War, since 1990, 1991, that unipower is America. And America took this unipower position as an opportunity to spread liberal democracy throughout the world, is what they're saying, spread American interests around the world. The problem is you can't spread liberal democracy from the butt of a gun, from the end of a gun. I mean, we saw that in the Middle East, what a disaster that was when Bush tried to spread liberal democracy in the Middle East through war. Same thing with Afghanistan. It's a disaster anywhere you try it. But the United States is clinging to this idea that they're the unipower. And the West goes along with them because the West knows, like United Kingdom, France, Germany, they know that the United States has their back, that they're part of that. And we see this unipower polar moment, not just militarily, but financially, economically, of course, because the dollar is the reserve currency throughout the world. Most major transactions that go on between countries is done in dollars. And so the United States is the big dog, and we don't want to stop being the big dog. The problem, of course, is over this time, China has grown into being a much greater power, and Russia has grown as more of a power. Now, it's weaker than the United States. It's weaker than China, but it is a serious power in the world. It's probably the third greatest power. If you look at the great powers of the world, those are the three. And the United States does not want that. Does not want there to be three. It wants there to be one and only one. And so anything it can do to weaken Russia, it is going to support. And so I think that's something that is behind the reason why the United States and the West killed any idea of a negotiated peace between Ukraine and Russia, because they fear Russia becoming more powerful, but more importantly, they feel like this is a way to weaken them. This is a way that we can weaken Russia. And the irony here is, however, that what the West is doing is actually creating a stronger multipolar moment. That's the irony here. In the United States' desperate attempt to remain the sole power in the world, it's actually accelerating the path to a multi-power world. How is it doing this? Well, what's happening is, of course, after the conflict started, even before the conflict started, the West, led by the United States, is pushing massive sanctions on Russia, hoping to crush them even more. The problem is that's backfired. That has not worked. I mean, the supporters of sanctions will just keep saying, oh, just give it more time. No, it's not working. The fact is that Russia has not been destroyed economically. In fact, the ruble, after an initial crash of the ruble when the conflict started, has bounced back and is stronger than it used to be. And also, a lot of countries are getting tired of being told what to do by the United States. And so they are negotiating with Russia directly. Just recently, I saw a story that Saudi Arabia, which is one of the biggest United States allies in the world, it is considering trade in other currencies. That's language for we might directly trade with Russia in rubles. Because right now, like I said, most trade is done in American dollar. And that, of course, strengthens America's economy. But if all of a sudden Saudi Arabia is trading oil or whatever the case may be with Russian rubles, and Iran is doing this, Iraq, China, India, Pakistan, if countries start to just deal directly with Russia in rubles rather than going through the US dollar, that has major consequences, and it just strengthens Russia even more. Likewise, countries are turning to China as they see that the United States is hell-bent on its plan to try to just run the world forever. They're looking at other alternatives. And so China is becoming more attractive to them. And so I heard somebody just recently talk about the fact that if there's three major powers in the world, United States, which is by far the most, China, which is coming up strong, and in Russia, which is the weakest of the three, but still that, if the United States really feels like China is the biggest threat, and it should. What do you think it should do? Should it try to push Russia into China's arms, or should it try to bring Russia into its own orbit? I mean, common sense would say you want to have Russia on your side rather than on China's side, if that's really the case. But instead, what they're doing is they're pushing Russia more and more towards China by doing this. And so ultimately, then, what we see here is that the West, led by the United States, is doing all it can to make this war continue. Because to them, the war should not end until Ukraine, until Putin is gone and Russia is brought to heel. And I think some neocons would even want Russia to be broken up into multiple countries to weaken them even further. And this is just an insane policy, in my opinion. I don't see how a logical, rational person can support such a policy, because you are talking about the country with the largest arsenal of nuclear weapons in the world. If they feel like there's an existential threat to Russia, they could ultimately use those nuclear bombs. That's the thing I think people don't understand. Most countries, all nuclear countries, they don't really want to use nuclear weapons because of the fact they know mutually assured destruction. Putin knows this. Biden knows this. Well, who knows if Biden knows this? Biden's people hopefully know this. All these people know this. However, if you believe your country's in an existential threat, then you will consider using nuclear weapons. Because ultimately, if Russia wins the war in Ukraine, and by that I mean they basically have the two eastern provinces of the four eastern provinces in Ukraine break away and become more friendly with Russia. Russia continues to control Crimea, and Ukraine still would have its the western parts would still rule itself outside of Russian influence, but wouldn't be part of NATO or the West. If Russia wins, ultimately that doesn't really impact America. We don't have an existential threat to that. And there's no existential threat to most Western countries like the United Kingdom or France or Germany. However, if Ukraine wins, and by winning, we use the Western definition of Russia is completely removed, even from Crimea, and their defeat and they're weakened greatly, their economy and their military is greatly weakened, and Putin is removed, in Russian eyes, that's an existential threat. And so they have nothing to lose ultimately by using nuclear weapons, because they're already going to be in trouble. Now, I don't think they use nuclear weapons against America necessarily, but they would use them in Ukraine. And so that's why this is an insane policy. The idea that we can't have a Ukraine that is not part of NATO, I think is just ridiculous. Of course we can have Ukraine that's not part of NATO. We should have Ukraine that's not part of NATO. So ultimately that's the big push here. Now there is some good news. I do want to give a little bit of good news. Recently, the RAND Corporation, which is basically a national security think tank, and it will state things that the Defense Department basically wants it to state. It's very much in bed with government, and how it's going to make its statements based upon what the Department of Defense really believes. They just recently came out with a report that essentially said, and this is the preamble in the report has this excerpt that really is what matters. It says, the costs and risks of a long war in Ukraine are significant and outweigh the possible benefits of such a trajectory for the United States. Ultimately, what the RAND Corporation was saying in this report they issued was that the United States does not want a long, drawn-out conflict in Ukraine. Now, this is startling, because this is some of the Western elites, some of the American elites, basically admitting, you know, we don't actually want to do what we say we're doing, what we say we're going to do, which is we'll fight till the end. This is a significant member of the Washington elite saying that's actually not a good plan. It probably means that the Department of Defense is resisting on some level the neocon State Department and White House that just like full speed ahead. No matter what, we just keep continue fighting. Whereas the Department of Defense is probably like, that's not necessarily the best idea. There are definite consequences. And we're seeing that. I mean, you see it in the fact that whenever there was a problem last year in America, supply chain issues, inflation, whatever, Biden would blame Putin. Now, of course, we all know that that's not the case, that there was a lot of factors involved in that. But the fact is that this war, this drawn-out war in Ukraine is harming American interests. And that's something that I think rational people are starting to see. So I think that's good news that some of the elites are actually starting to see this. And they see there's not, it's not an American interest just to have this war continue forever. Okay, so ultimately, let me just wrap it up here and say, so what should we do? What's our attitude should be? I think we need to continue to oppose the narrative, oppose the narrative that we have to defeat Russia at all costs. We have to destroy Russia at all costs and eliminate Putin. I think instead what we need to do is we really need to push for a negotiated peace. Get our involvement completely out of this war. Remember, people are dying every day as long as this goes on. And so the fact that we did not have a negotiated peace last March means that thousands and thousands of people have died. Cities have been destroyed. People's lives upended during that 11 months. That did not have to be. And again, Zelensky himself would have agreed to that at that point. And so we really need to make sure that we are for peace and that we are against any involvement by the United States in this conflict, and that we should be the broker of peace, in fact. There's an excellent podcast a couple weeks ago by Tim Flanders over at 1 Peter 5 called The Church is Anti-War but Not Pacifist. If you want to understand kind of the foundations of why the Catholic Church, why Catholics, I should say, should really be pushing for peace in this situation, I think I would recommend that podcast. I'll try to remember to link to it in the show notes after we get off air, because I think that's a very good podcast to show. He's not talking about this specific conflict. He's talking about the foundations why the church abhors war. It's not pacifist. We don't believe there's no such thing as a just war, but at the same time, we do all we can to have peace. Just like Blessed Carl, who I'm talked about here. I have a nice bust here behind me of him. As Blessed Carl would have supported as well. Okay, so obviously the other thing we can do is we can pray and fast for the end of this conflict, pray for a peaceful resolution, a resolution to happen soon, and as just as possible. That's the thing I think people don't always realize, is that a resolution is not going to be ideal at this point. It's not going to be 100% just. What we need to pray and fast for is the most just possible. Putin is not going to be removed from office. Russia is not going to be destroyed. I don't think that would be just for Russia to be destroyed, by the way. But at the same time, both sides are going to need to make concessions. We might not like that. We might not want Ukraine to make any concessions. But the fact remains is this is the reality on the ground. And so we have to accept that and then push for the most just resolution we can. Okay, so pray to Blessed Carl for peace in that region. Pray to Our Lady of Fatima for peace to reign in Russia and in Ukraine. And until next time, everybody, God love you.